I'm recording.
And
you know what? This is one of those rare nights too, where all four connections seem to be good.
Yeah,
I just jinxed it by saying that. But
dare. Son of a bitch!
I said I just with the connection pretty good with the tonight.
Oh, can I say that fooled me? I thought, wow, he really did jinx it. Oh well, hey, listen.
You guys know my buddy. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh no, I don't know. Go ahead. I was just going to
say. No, I was going to say my buddy Dave Scales can do that fantastically, where he breaks out like a broken mic. It's kind of hard to do perfectly. He does it so well.
Why don't you just marry him then? Scales is so great.
You know what? You know what? Maybe I will. I want my ring back, Scott. I want my ring back.
Can I marry him? Because
a good looking man.
He's kind of looking for somebody to marry.
He is kind of a good looking man.
He is.
Web Comics Weekly.
That's right. Don't it's time for subject. Another episode of Webcomics Weekly, the creative podcast of indeterminate length, but usually right around 55 to 56 minutes, where we discuss comics, the art of making them, and posting them to the web. We are your hosts. You might have heard my voice before. I'm Scott Kurtz. My dulcet tones can be found in pencil form at pvponline.com. Who's that over yonder? Why, is it Christopher Straub?
It is me, and you can find my completely mute voice at starslip.com and chainsawsuit.com. Who's over there? Is that Brad Geiger?
Well, by golly, it certainly is. And you can find my melodious, mellifluous visual tones at Evil Inc., evil-comic.com. And what's that over yonder? Dave, are you?
Why, that is me, and you can find my... Malifluent tones, most recently on NPR, but also here on Webcomics Weekly. And you can find my scribblings and whatnot at SheldonComics.com 7 days a week. All right, that's the four of us. Wait, who's that over the yonder? Is that you, Ronald? Well, sure is.
Wow, right,
that was the worst.
Wow.
That was the worst.
I was going to say, who brought Rich Little?
That was like the worst Ronald Reagan I've ever done.
You know what? If John Wayne was here, I think he did something like that.
You know what's funny? I'm amazed you brought up Rich Little because I was thinking about him the other day.
Really?
Yeah. There was I got to tell you something. There was a time when Rich Little was – I was a huge fan of his when I was younger because I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a Christmas Carol special on HBO where Rich Little did a Christmas Carol. And he dressed up and did all the parts and all the voices. And one of them was Peter Sellers as Inspector Clouseau. Do you remember that, Brad?
Yep.
I always go to Brad on this. Yeah.
I'm right there with you. I've done a little bit of thinking about Rich Little and people like him because I think those guys have really fallen off the last decade or so. And the reason that certainly in the 50s, in the 60s and the 70s, Hollywood was comprised of a lot of people that had unique looks and unique voices. You had a Jack Nicholson, you had a Peter Sellers, you had a David Niven, okay? Today's Hollywood is so homogenized that you don't have that, and therefore impressionists don't really have anything to work from.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a modern impressionist, can you?
Well, you know what, though? I'm going to counteract you guys, though. Those guys still exist, but here's what happened. Is back in the day, the way those guys had to make money is they would have to tour, and so every once in a while to promote their tour, they'd have to go in Carson. But now every one of those guys signed like a $4 million deal with an off-the-strip casino in Vegas, and they just park it there, and that's all they do all year long. You know?
Is that it, really?
Yeah, that's why all the guys that you or I would associate as like B-level comedians from the 70s and 80s, they're all, you know, Nipsey Russell, he's off on some, junior casino in Vegas now with a $2 million deal probably. And so you never hear anymore.
But who are they doing impressions? My point is, who are they doing impressions of? I guarantee you those guys from the 60s and 70s and previous, because who's going to do a Matthew McConaughey impersonation?
Damon do one. And it was actually really good.
Yeah.
Matt Damon did a Matthew McConaughey impression?
Yeah, it was actually really good.
I guarantee you Rich Little's doing all the same impressions in Vegas. He's doing Tony Curtis and Peter Sellers and, you know.
Yeah. Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau. Those guys had voices, man.
Yeah,
and probably pretty good versions of Ronald Reagan, unlike mine. So there you go.
Oh, Dave, it was good. I know you're fishing.
Can you just going back to it? It still hurts. The sting is still there.
You know what's not going... compromised? Web comics.
Ain't that the truth?
No. Take it back.
Boom.
I want to go back to Nipsey Russell. Hold on. Yeah.
Do a poem for us. That'll bring us right back.
If only that was the case. If only webcomics weren't homogenized.
You don't think... Hey, don't think
you know what, you actually? You know what, Brad?
Son of a gun. You did jinx it, didn't you, Dave?
I totally jinxed it. Brad, I'm sorry, my friend. You sound like how being pulled up, the last memory chip is being pulled out right before they put him down.
Everybody does. it's all right. It's all right, because everyone's recording locally, and we'll use Dropbox to get that stuff over to me tonight, and I'll have it up tonight or tomorrow. But
I was gonna say in a good 4 weeks.
No, I'm not gonna do that again. what were you gonna say, Brad? Are you gonna ask me if I really think webcomics are homogenized?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I don't know what homogenized mean. Chris, what does the homogenized mean? That it's all the same?
Yeah, he just means they're cookie cutter.
I think they're getting kind of cookie cutter. Don't you guys feel that way?
I will say that you know how we've talked about how all the best webcomics right now are being made by women?
Yeah.
All of them are super unique and super good. But I cannot speak to the ones that have not hit yet, that are being made. Maybe they're only their first year or two in, and I don't follow them and I haven't really heard of them yet. I don't know. Right. There might be a whole cloud of imitators, but I that's really hard to say.
Well, here's a good way to test whether it's homogenized. Name me, three web comics that are similar. I bet you can't go further past three.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I think you're right.
That are successful. Like, all right, so Control Alt Delete is kind of Penny Arcade copy. One direction, not both directions.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, try to find three webcomics that are like Dr. McNinja is not like anything else out there. You know, that's there's nothing.
Oh, but
else.
Isn't it though? Think about it. All right, because like for example, what you're doing is you're saying like, well, you know, Control Delete's kind of like Penny Arcade because you're trying to say, well, this is a video game comic and that's a video game comic, but that's not the same. That's not what you need to compare. For example, I would lump Dinosaur Comics and XKCD in the same category.
Yeah, I would too.
You see what I'm saying? It's like...
Well, okay. Under what umbrella? I'm not
like
arguing with you.
People who are kind of snarkily funny that would be better off drawing essays because they just use the same art all the time or a facsimile of art. And maybe they're more... And you know, they are... They could exist as essays, is what I'm trying to say. Chris, I'm having a hard time articulating.
No, I understand what you're saying. I think it's very difficult to find proof for that. That doesn't just seem anecdotal. You know what I mean? I would like to assemble that because I know what you mean.
Yeah.
The thing is that both of those strips are very successful in their own right. And well, no. Okay, there is a strip. That is very similar to XKCD, and it's been dug a couple of times in the same fashion. And it's called, what is it called? Abstruse Goose. And all the characters are just heads. Unless when they need arms, they get arms. But it's very simple. It's very much what you would find in the margins of an engineer's notes first class.
Oh, right. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah,
right.
I've seen that, and I thought, oh, come on, XKCD knockoff. But it's been dug and was, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how well it's doing, but
I mean, this might get me in trouble because, I mean, and this isn't because I don't like Chris's work or anything. I really do honestly have a hard time making the time to read a lot of these webcomics, so maybe I'm not the best guy to ask. But, for example... you know, you would try to lump Dr. McNinja in with any other comic that has a type of humor that's like, now if you excuse me, I've got to go put some bananas in my pants, you know, because I'm a little bit off. But Chris, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
I know what you're saying. It's very tick-like.
For example, exactly.
It's non sequitur.
Oh, in terms of absurdity and
yeah, they're making the humor that's going to be absurd humor, and mine's character driven. So, I mean, I think you could lump PvP and Girls with Slingshots and Octopus Pie, and you could put all those in the same category because they're character-driven strips.
I see, but now we're talking about grouping senses of humor together, and there may be only like four types of senses of humor if you're going
to
do that.
But what I'm saying is, I just think that it used to feel like there were the things that you were used to seeing in print, and then there were some really unique, and I'm not speaking about myself, but there were some really unique voices online. Like, for example, Tetsuya. Tetsuya still is. I think he's really kind of come into his own again. Mm-hmm. But Tat was a really unique voice online. Anyway, you know what it might be? It might be that I am so involved with these people behind the scenes that the problems and the things we're all discussing behind the scenes are starting to seem like it's all blending together for me.
That makes sense. It doesn't help that, like, you nor I read a whole lot of webcomics a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's true. Like, well, I can only put it in a subjective term, and this is probably so unhelpful because it's subjective. But of the 5 that I read regularly and the 30 that I maybe check in on semi-regularly, I never feel like, homogenization, that's the problem of the day. You know,
I see what you're saying.
I don't feel like I'm reading the same thing when I click around on 30, 40 different websites, you know.
But there's definitely problems is what you're saying.
I bet if I went to a bunch of Drunk Duck sites or Comic Genesis sites, I probably would feel that way. You know?
No, you definitely would feel that way then, for sure. But what I'm saying is, do you read?
I'm laughing because it's like you'd feel terrible.
You would.
You'd have a big problem.
You'd be sick in your stomach.
You would. You would, if you start reading Drunk Duck or Comic Genesis and you just start clicking on random strip, you're going to be like, well, now I know why the syndicated cartoonists say that we're all crap. Because this is probably what they found. But I don't know. It kind of feels like Apple Geeks, Megatokyo, Mac Hall, they all fall into a category. And then, I don't know. I guess I'm wrong.
I guess I want to move on, and I'm wrong, and let's just keep going. No, I think it's something that has to be examined like over a long period of time. Actually, you know what? I think right now is the right time to examine it.
No, you know what? Actually, I'll disagree with you, Chris. Because I see what you mean. It does need to be examined, and it needs to be examined from a distance. And time usually has to be the distance, not creator versus non-creator. Like. You can look back on the 60s and like beat poets, but you need to see it from 30 years past or 40 years past before you really see like, oh, okay, that was the overriding mood, that was the theme, that was the
right, because back then that was really stupid.
I also think it should be examined by I also think it should be examined by someone who is not us, and the reason why I say that is because I have really felt myself withdrawing lately from a certain topic, a certain area. And that is you have me, the creator, and the audience I'm trying to reach, okay? The people that are interested in the content I'm providing. And then you have me, the creator, that's interested in interacting with other people who create content, okay?
Right.
So what I'm withdrawing from is spending too much time interacting with and thinking about the other creators, and this isn't in a negative way. I mean, even in a positive way. Spending too much time thinking about the people that are also creating content. If for no other reason, it takes time away from me to have a direct relationship with the people who I'm creating my content for. And I know that those circles overlap and they're not mutually exclusive. But it's kind of like what Merlin Mann did recently. Merlin Mann, and I'm pleased to announce we're going to get to interview him soon for the podcast. Merlin Mann is a productivity guru, and he recently switched from focusing on getting things done and the minutiae of that and actually trying to figure out what needs to happen for creative-type people to find the time in their lives to create and build things that are important and meaningful to them, they're passionate about. And what he felt was the difference between the two was that if you get really excited about productivity and all you do is focus on productivity, then you'll spend the month setting up your computer for productivity and never being productive. Because now you're focused on the business of productivity instead of just doing what you do. And so, right. You know, you can try OmniFocus, and then all of a sudden you're going to try Things, and then all of a sudden you're going to try, you know, the hipster PDA, which is a bunch of business cards, and then you just get sucked into these conventions and these speeches and these podcasts and these appearances where all you do is talk about productivity, and you ironically have wasted time.
Right.
And so, it's not that I would ever want to stop doing this podcast or stop doing webcomics.com, but for example, I just started doing color 5 days a week, and it was just something I wanted to do on a whim last week, but I think I'm going to stick with it. And if that means I have to sacrifice some time interacting with other cartoonists or things like that, or maybe kind of getting involved and really examining that kind of stuff, because it's fun to do. I enjoy doing it. If I give that up, then I have more time to do stuff like create new content, create another strip, color my strip for my readers.
Yeah.
So that stuff does need to get examined, but I certainly hope it doesn't have to be me examining it.
Well, it needs to be because you're the only qualified one. So make the time.
But no, but I know what you mean, though, Scott, because like Glow and I used to joke around, because my wife's an artist, too, and we used to joke around that like you can have a clean house or you can create art, but you can't do both. And because there's people in our lives that are like very meticulous and they've got all their files in order and they've got all the this and the that and they're all the pencils are aligned and ready to go on their desk. But if you spent all your morning aligning all those pencils and getting the house clean and in order, that was time you could have been spending creating art. And granted, that's an extreme and it's not worth focusing on the fact that it's a clean house. But you get what I'm going with it, which is that if you spend too much time on the business of being an artist, or the business of getting ready to be an artist, you tend to spend less time just being an artist.
No, absolutely. This is not to bring up Merlin Mann again, but I recently tweeted this quote that I thought was pretty impressive, and he said, "You eventually learn that true priorities are like arms. If you think you have more than a couple, you're either lying or you're crazy." You know, but anyway,
that's a tricky one.
That is a tricky one because I actually do have a third arm that I don't like bringing up or talking about. But anyway, what I'm getting at is maybe what feels homogenized to me about webcomics these days are the problems, or not the problems, are the topics of discussion amongst other webcomic artists, and that's feeling homogenous to me.
Now, I will agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I've actually, and it's funny because I wonder to myself how much it has to do with the fact that this week I'm also putting together my next book, so I've kind of checked that anyway. But all of a sudden, in the last like 7 days or so, there's conversations that I was engaged in online where I'm like, nah, I'm done, I'm out, I don't really care,
because yeah.
it's kind of the same 50 topics over and over again.
Yeah.
And I sort of realized all of a sudden this last week, like getting the next book together is more important than anything else I need to be doing. You know.
It was amazing to me what happened to me recently. I kind of was testing out the BlackBerry, and I immediately decided to myself that I liked the BlackBerry, but I don't think I could give up the iPhone for it. And then something kind of funny happened. I put the new iPhone 3.0 software on my iPhone because I have it as a testing machine because I'm developing a software app for it. And I got to test out all the new bells and whistles, but it kind of made it not a working phone. And I hadn't figured out how to revert it back yet. So I was kind of forced to use my BlackBerry. And what I realized was that I did miss things on the iPhone. But what I was missing was all superfluous. Like, I could still email. I could still get phone calls. I could still Twitter even. I can't dick around and check websites all day. Can't play games on it. And it's like all the things that I can't do on it, I don't need to be doing all day long anyway.
Right.
And I realized there were a couple time waster websites that I had completely lost track of because I had stopped using my iPhone. And it dawned on me that every chance I got, no matter where I was whipping out my iPhone and checking those three sites, those time waster sites. Yeah. And, you know, so now what's happened is I've switched over to a brand new phone number that I've only given to certain people. And I ended up
– and which, whatever you call me, I always go, who is this?
Yeah.
I never know it's you calling. I'm always like, ah, what number is this?
But it's amazing anyway. Because, you know, you get at the end of the day, I go back to the bedroom where my iPhone is sitting now as just an iPod to listen to at night and watch TV shows on or something, and I, you know, when I'm laying in bed. And I see all the calls that I missed that I didn't need to get. Mm. You know, for the people that I don't need to talk to during the day right then. Like, it's okay that I missed their call and I'm going to get back to them tomorrow when I have a block of time.
Yeah. Right.
And so and I mean it really is amazing. And but to bring it back to webcomics is that you can get so lost. It made me realize I unsubscribed to two or three mailing lists I was on, and it's completely freed up so much time. And honestly, it's just a matter of these discussions are all the same discussions. And maybe it's because I've graduated from it. You know, like,
yeah, no, I think graduated is the right word.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
And it's not that I want to be a dick to anybody, but there's this really wonderful thing in Gmail called canned responses. You can activate it in the labs. Dave, you should definitely check that out. I know you're a big Gmail user. Up at the top of your settings is a little Google Labs. It looks like a little beaker.
Right.
And you can try all these things that are in beta, and one of them are canned responses, where you can set up like three or four canned responses, like things that you know you always reply a lot. One of them can be for fan mail, like, hey, got your fan mail. I really appreciated it. I appreciate the kind words, and thanks for writing. And then you can respond to a lot of people that way because, you know, you don't need
what's the criteria? Do you have to select it and then say, all right, this one's a canned response?
Do you type in one first word kind of thing, like thanks, and then it fills in the canned response? Or how do you do that?
I think it's a choice on a drop-down menu. No, I gotta go log in.
It'll tell you.
Chris, it has a snarky set thing. It's like, no, you don't want to go that kind in your response. You want to go a little
tougher. It's a button. It's a button, and you can choose snark or not snark. I shut down all other programs that wasn't Skype. But one of the canned responses was, I'm thinking about setting up a canned response for other webcomic people that email me and just say, listen, I really appreciate you asking that question, but – you know, this is one of the reasons why I wrote a book and why we have the website and why we do the podcast every week. And I really just do not have the time to take these emails on a basis. And I hope that doesn't sound like I'm being a dick, but I just don't have the time. And I'm just going to – I mean, I think I could recapture enough time to draw a second strip just by not participating in those discussions anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's graduate too, because I get into that jag that I have such a hard time saying what you said just now. You know, it's so hard because every time I do that, I feel like, oh, I'm going into sales mode for the book, and that's not really how it is. But the fact of the matter is, we did write all this stuff down once, and you can go to the library and pick up the book, you know.
Right.
The only time I ever really did it with any kind of self-satisfaction was somebody was really kind of a smart aleck the way he answered the question. He said, you know, I've already bought your book, so if you don't answer me, you should feel really ashamed. And it just so happened that the question he was asking was it covered directly in the book.
It was covered on the cover of the
book.
And
I said, you know what, you made it real simple. Page 89.
Oh my gosh! Well, I think this is a good segue is to lead into things because I know that we wanted to talk about things.
Yeah, tell me more.
Yeah.
I am so skeptical.
Brad, let me.
Well, Brad, you know what? I'll let Scott go first, or I can go first because I was skeptical as well, and I downloaded it because it has a 15-day. Trial, which I don't know if they had before. Maybe that's why I didn't try it before when Scott first pitched it. But it's at – what is it at? Cultured – I don't even
Culture
remember.
Cultured Code? What is it? Cultured Code.
Now I got to look.
I do remember that it took me 20 minutes of Google searching because if you try to type in things into Google, that's like the worst.
Yeah, but no, that's funny. It's culturedcode.com. I typed in things and it was the first thing that popped up, but maybe my Google knows. It's at culturedcode.com. slash things.
Oh, well, now it is first on Google. Yeah. Well, you know what? A couple weeks ago it was not.
So,
anyway, all right.
Brad, I know your fear for this because it is $49. Okay. It's a $49 purchase. I'm not going to lie to you. It's $50. And honestly, I think that's fucking overpriced.
Yeah, I agree.
Honestly, I mean, I've seen applications that are this complicated, that are of this caliber, that are in the $15 to $30 range. And that's all it needs to be.
I have an addendum for that.
What?
But pray continue, because I have another opinion about things.
I have an opinion. I have a theory that the reason why they've priced things so high is because it's a productivity app that works off of getting things done, and the big premier app for that is OmniFocus, and OmniFocus is a ridiculously priced app. So it's almost like if you're in the Adobe Photoshop competitor business, it's okay to price your app at $200 because Photoshop's $600, and so they've already set the bar.
Wait, what's OmniFocus? Now I got to look at that. What is that?
You know what? Don't bother. It's OmniFocus is super complicated. It's better if you have a big business with multiple users. It's just not for us.
Okay.
So,
well, one of the reasons why I was thinking things might be price expensive is it's sort of that Apple philosophy of hiding complexity. Maybe that's what it does.
I don't know that that's the case, Dave. Honestly.
I mean, well, because it's a really simple interface. I
it
mean,
is
really
simple. It is. And pray tell, do say, fair Straub, what was it you were going to say?
Methinks.
Methinks no, the bard doth protest too much.
Well, I have two related points about things. I started using it, I don't remember, but it's been at least a month. And it has been really helpful for me. I bought it first for my iMac, and...
Yes.
You know, dropped $50.
Sure.
Didn't really use it. I thought, no, I don't know that this is a good thing. I bought the companion version for my iPhone, which I think is $10. And now it becomes useful to me, because now wherever I am, I can jot down an idea and then sync it to my machine at home.
I actually like using it at home, and I do like that I have it on an iPhone, but I don't need that iPhone app to like it.
Okay.
You know, I don't need – okay, so in contrast, I don't even have the iPhone app. I've never tried it.
The only reason the iPhone app is good, Dave, is because if you choose to use things to capture, then all you have to do is sync it. You don't have to come home and type it in again. You just tell things
–
you just open up your things and open up your iPhone, and if they both are connected to the same Wi-Fi, it just goes – and syncs it.
Well, you know, my solution for that is I just email myself the idea in the subject line, then copy and paste it into things when I get home.
You don't have to copy and paste it, dude. Just drag it from mail.
Well, that's what I mean. It's not that hard.
Let's back up.
Okay.
Brad, let me give you the pitch, Brad.
All right.
Okay.
To me, this sounds like a to-do list application.
No. I don't want you to think of it as a to-do list. Okay. Here's what I want you to think about it. And let me full disclosure, say everything I'm about to say right now as far as process is not my idea. It comes from a book called Getting Things Done by David Allen. And I'm not pulling a Outliers ripoff here. I'm telling you that this is from a book. Okay.
Okay.
But Brad, here's how you got to think about your brain, okay? Your brain has
is not very useful.
It's not very useful. Your brain is really great for coming up with an idea. It's not good for keeping an idea. Your brain is RAM. Your memory, it's memory. And the more things you juggle in that, the more your brain gets clogged up. And you all know what happens to a computer. You know what happens to a computer when your RAM gets used up. It slows down. Nothing gets done. You don't like it. Okay? So what you need to do is the minute you come up with an idea, you need to capture it and put it into a system where you can forget about it and not worry about it. And the reason why it's safe to do that is because this is a system that you're going to come back and review regularly, and that you know that once you capture an idea into it, it will not be lost or forgotten. And once you give yourself that peace of mind and you become comfortable with capturing ideas and placing it into the system, it will be out of your head. And you won't be juggling it. Because if you think, I got to remember to call the plumber about this, I've got to remember to tell my boss that I want to do this with Fables, I got to remember to tell my wife about the insurance phone call, by the time you get to the third thing, you're locked up because you're trying to juggle all that at the same time. But if all you have to remember is to check things, then you're fine. Your brain is freed up and you will be 1,000 times more creative, okay? And right now I'm saying to you that I'm choosing to use things. You can use it with index cards. You can use it with OmniFocus. You can – whatever it is you feel more comfortable with, a to-do list, whatever. But here's how we use things for it, okay? Things is a program for your Mac. I'm sorry it's not for the PC guys. But essentially what you do is – it's just like most Mac applications where on the left-hand side you have that tree just like in your Finder, okay? At the top you have your inbox, and then underneath that you have things to focus on. And focus is divided into three or four categories.
Today, next, and someday.
Yeah, it's next, scheduled, someday, and projects. Because projects are things that require more than one task, okay? But for example, all right, I need to get my store in order. I need to make sure all my products are current. I need to make sure I have new stuff in there every month. And I need to get some stuff sorted out. That's a project. There are 12 or 13 tasks involved in that. But if I want to finish this whole idea of getting my store in order, that concept, that worry in my head, what's the first thing I need to do? What's the very, very first thing I need to do? I need to sit down with my wife and discuss with her how much money we want to spend on replenishing T-shirts this month. So I go, new task, talk to Angie about replenishing T-shirts. Okay? Now what I can do is I can assign tags to this and things. So I can say this is store. I can tag it with store, website, wife, home. I can tag it with 2 minute, 10 minute, 20 minute, anything you think describes it. And now it's captured in your system. And if you need to, you can assign a date to it if you know it has to be done by a certain date. There's all these things you can do. And so now you have all this stuff captured and you feel great. Well, it was disorganized in my head. Now it's disorganized by things. But the great thing about things is all those tags that you gave your individual tasks, you can sort by. So let's say it's Saturday and you know your wife's home. Go into things and hit wife at the top and you can see all the things you need to talk to your wife about.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say you have 10 minutes. Go into things and hit 10 minutes and you can see all your tasks that you know only take you 10 minutes or 2 minutes. And you can just knock them all out.
And for Brad, that tag for wife might also coincide with 2 minutes. So that's
exactly
good.
So if you sort by wife, 2 minutes, disappointment,
and then crying, you'll have all four tags and
divorce
papers.
You'll
see you have one to do.
Yeah.
One to do.
And then you can log it off and you feel great about yourself. But no, Brad, the really cool thing about it is it integrates with your Mac. So let's say, for example, one of my tasks is to collect everyone that bought a Scratch Fury Moquette but had a broken part and figure out who needs what parts. So I make a task called gather replacement parts for Scratch Fury orders. Then I open up my mail and I just start dragging emails into it onto the task I just created, and it's linked. I don't have to keep track of all those emails.
That's powerful. Now, yeah. That I like.
Not only are they linked, you can actually delete those emails from your inbox. They're actually in your –
they're
in things now.
Yeah.
But you've cleared out your inbox, which is amazing. It helps me get to a zero inbox so often.
I think you can even drag URLs into things, can't you?
Yeah, and in Leopard you can drag actual Never mind. I already said that. You can drag the actual emails in Leopard is what I was going to say. Ba-da-da, I'm repeating myself.
But for example, I mean, it's just kind of like – it was kind of like when I was talking to my dad right before I started to get serious about losing weight. And I said, look, Dad, I've got so far to go. It's just an impossible task. And he says, well, if you're looking at your end goal, yeah, it's impossible. But if you look at how much weight you want to lose this month, that's not impossible. You can tackle that. Don't worry about the end goal. And so with your big projects, like for example, the Awesomeology, which was a 600-page hardcover, I broke that up into about 100 tasks. And I could look ahead and see I don't have to worry about anything past these first 5 tasks because I won't need to do those for another month. But I don't have to worry about remembering them because they're all in my system.
Right.
That's the most important thing, Brad.
Trying to juggle all that stuff mentally is that you keep going over that those entire hundred in your mind, and you're giving that much mind share that you don't have room for anything else. That part I do get.
Well, no, that's the most important part, and that's why the iPhone app is so important. And that's the only thing that I would really miss about it. But capturing is not that difficult. You can carry around a notepad with you, and that's your capture device. But the great thing about if you have your iPhone with you and you remember, you know what? I need to check out that web page, that link about Merlin Manscott was talking about. I want to listen to that podcast. You open up things and you go, free time. You know, you go Merlin Man podcast and you tag it free time, 20 minutes, work, productivity. And then you forget about it. You don't have to worry about even remembering to write it down when you get home. That is convenient about the iPhone app.
That key.
And for me, the most helpful one, Brad, even though I haven't really even acted on it per se, is the folder in Things called Someday. Because I have so many ideas that I'm like, I have no idea where to capture that. Do I email it to myself? And how would I find it ever again? But the whole idea of a folder on Things that, like, I'm going to click on it right now, and I've got maybe 35 things listed under a Someday Projects. And some of them are snippets of idea, like I need to order buck slits. And some of them are I have to create whole websites or start whole, second or third strips, a children's book idea. And, I mean, some of this stuff is like just – and I can add to those ideas as I go, and it might be 6 months from now. What, Chris? What?
It's like be happy. It's like find love.
Finally learn how to work Things to the best of its potential.
And that's the only thing in your entire
That's the only
things.
Thing in your entire Things is learn Things.
Someday.
No, I mean, for me, that's a valuable thing because I have ideas, as I'm sure you guys do, that they'll suddenly spring back into my mind 3 years later, and I'll be like, God damn it, why did I never act on that? And the basic problem is because I forgot about it,
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I will say this for Things, and this is why, because I was on the 15-day trial up until like 3 days ago, and why I actually plunked down the money. So I'm putting together the next Sheldon book, and it's going so much faster than any of the previous six books I've done because – and I'm convinced it's because of Things. For whatever reason, the way this program is structured, I'm cranking through my to-do list or just little accomplishments. And it's like Scott said, it's because they're broken up into these manageable little bits of time.
There's a kind of a visceral – like a video game level of satisfaction to it. Like I did that one, cross it off. Now I only got two things.
And even the way it cross-files things in terms of like, all right, these are all the things I have to do today. They didn't happen today? All right, well, then they get bumped back to tomorrow. And it does it all automatically, which is
– Yeah.
For a guy who used to do it all on a Post-it note and then copy them over to a new Post-it note on Wednesday for the stuff I didn't do on Tuesday, there's a real enjoyment factor that the program does it for me because that's 5-10 minutes that I'm saving right there,
What I really found about it, and it was something that I did not expect it would do, is it really helped me with stuff at home. Like, I mean, I have no problem setting up to-do lists for things to do at work, but I really got scared about moving out of the office because there were so many things I needed to do, and I threw it into Things, and that stuff got done. I know it all wouldn't have gotten done on time before, but it's stupid stuff. It's little two-minute things that need to be scheduled that I would have forgotten to do. It would have all been rushed at the last minute, and it really does. It really does help you if you just sit and say like, I need to call around and compare prices for storage facilities, and then, I'm sorry. The first one was research online storage facilities, and then I pulled in, and what I like to do is set time limits to it because that really helps me. Like this is going to take 10 minutes. Because you can block out 10 minutes of time for yourself.
Right.
And to just click on 10 minutes and see everything that you can do that's only going to take you 10 minutes or 2 minutes. Let's say you have 10 minutes time. You can knock out two or three two-minute things. Or then you can go to your 10-minute one. If you have 30 minutes, knock out all your 10-minute ones. Because you're going to find that they don't all take 10 minutes exactly. But I wouldn't have gotten half of that stuff done. It really is about freeing all that stuff out of your head so that you're not constantly juggling it.
And feel like you've been creative since starting this?
Yeah. I'm coloring my strips every day now.
Wow.
I'm actively seeing a way that I could do some stuff that I've had on back burners for a long time. And that's really encouraging to me. I mean,
I don't want to overplay it either. Because, you know, the truth is you could do this with Post-it cards. It really is just a matter of setting up a system. But the reason why I like things is because I do most of my work life is on my computer.
It takes the discipline off your shoulders.
Right. I mean, look.
Which is the whole problem in the first place.
When someone says, you know, well, make a to-do list, get a note. Well, listen, I get an email in, and I'm trying to keep track of 6 emails of stuff that people want from me. That's not going to get organized on Notepad. I'm not taking an email and writing it down. But I can pull that email into things, you know. And
stays digital. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're right. That's super helpful. And you know what? I just realized, because this sounds like it's one massive ad for things, that none of us are in any way getting paid for this. It's just that we really dig this program.
I hope they – I would love for them to offer us a sponsorship. But I really do like the – no, I seriously do like the program. I'm going to – if I might, I might even suggest another application, and even though I'm not getting paid for it, just because it's taken the given me such peace of mind.
And that is Google.
And that is Microsoft. No. It's a program called Dropbox. It's actually a web service called Dropbox. And you can find it at getdropbox.com. And it's just one of these. I'm sure it's the same as any other of these online storage systems like Mosey or what's the one you use, Dave?
Mosey. I love it.
Oh, you use Mosey. Okay.
Yeah.
I tried S3. I didn't try Mosey. I hate .Mac or .me, that iDisk. It's ridiculous.
I hate .Mac.
Why?
Oh, it's
their
awful.
Their storage, it's just terrible. It's way overpriced. It never works right.
So what Dropbox is it's got this beautiful web interface, but what it is, it's for the Mac or the PC. You download a piece of software and install it. It's pretty small, real quick, and painless. And it creates a folder in your computer, in your files, called Dropbox. And anything that you put in there, it's in the background while you're not thinking about it, just starts uploading it to your identical Dropbox folder on in the cloud. So it really isn't a matter of – this was always my problem with any backup system, even backing up to a local hard drive is – you know, you forget to back up, or it's the end of the week and you're like, okay, what do I need to back up? What did I create? I created some artwork. I guess I created a couple strips, you know. And then you're always double checking to make sure that you back stuff up. Or I know I recommended SuperDuper, and SuperDuper really wants to make a copy of everything. It just wants to, you know, wipe out the previous one and just recopy everything over. The great thing about Dropbox is you just make sure that whatever you know you want backed up is in your Dropbox folder. And as you add to it, it's automatically updated. It just is done for you.
But how is that different from anything else, though?
Because
like Time Machine, for example.
Well, no, Time Machine, it is like Time Machine. But the difference about Time Machine is it's not local anywhere. If there's a fire, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Right.
Because it's up in the cloud on their multiple servers. It's backed up a bajillion times or whatever. It's for offline storage.
For me, in earthquake country, oddly, that's a nice sensation. It's just because I know that my roof could come down and all my local stuff would just be ruined, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a separate office home anymore. So it's not like what I have saved at home is different from my office anymore. But also, the great thing about Dropbox is that it's all accessible from the web. So I moved my entire PvP folder, all my artwork, all my archives, you know, all 10 years archives of PvP, all the collections, all the InDesign folders, everything. It took me 3 or 4 days to upload it all, but it's all up in the cloud. So, you know, I don't even need this portable hard drive I have to travel with anymore. It doesn't matter. If I'm going to go to Seattle and work out of the Penny Arcade office for a week, I can just pull whatever I need off of Dropbox.
Wow. How would you sync it up when you get back, though?
What do you mean? Oh, well, that's a great thing. Anything you add to Dropbox syncs back with your computer.
Wow.
No. Chris, it's more complicated than that if you want it to be. Let's say you have two computers. Let's say you have a Mac and you have a laptop that's a Windows machine. You have Dropbox on both of them. Both are connected to the same account. So you upload a bunch of crap to the cloud. Once you upload to your cloud, your PC downloads it. Any computer connected to it downloads it. It just matches the folders.
Wow.
So like if you know, if you have a home system and a work system, and you create a bunch of stuff at work and it starts uploading it to the cloud, the minute your other computer at home connects to Dropbox, it starts downloading it from the cloud to match it.
Wow.
And that,
that is awesome.
That even happens if you change the file or anything. Any file that is altered or uploaded or moved.
Yeah, that alone, I would say, makes it worth it.
And you can do it for simple stuff, like you can get a free Dropbox account just to move stuff back and forth between computers, or you can do what I do and spend $99 for the year and get 50 gig and put your whole life up there.
Mm.
And it's I love it. I mean, and the best part about it is I'm never worrying about it. If it's important, I just make sure it's saved somewhere inside the Dropbox folder.
So let me ask you guys a question, because this has actually bothered me recently. So I back up locally onto two drives using SuperDuper, and I back up to a distant location using Mozy, right?
Yeah.
And all of them copy every file on my computer, which is just the way I like to do it. But how can I be sure? Because and this is stupid, but I just want peace of mind. How can I be sure that I'm actually capturing everything in all locations? Is there a system that will double check for me? Like a lightweight program that'll just check mirroring and see if it's working right?
I don't understand what you mean. Like, you want to make sure that everything that – well, no, I don't know how to do that. I wouldn't know. I mean, that the system itself you'd have to trust. That's another system to fail, I guess.
Like, we always tell people, backup. But every once in a while I hear about a cartoonist who's like, oh, no, my computer completely failed. And it's weird. I just want, like, a triple sense of protection that they're actually mirroring one another.
I think that's why I like Dropbox also, because when you log onto the web interface, all it is showing you is a finder. I mean, it's the same folder system that's on your computer. So it's really easy for me to click through and see that everything I need is in where it's supposed to be. As opposed to when I use an Amazon's S3 and I'm just FTPing stuff up and I hope it all made it over.
Yeah.
Right. You know what? There must be a feature in Mozy that I can find. Yeah, I haven't done a lot of reading on it, so I got.
How do you like Mozy? I mean, how does the interface on that work? How do you tell it how to upload stuff?
Mozy is entirely behind the scenes. So for me, you can set it up for very specific folders to constantly mirror just those folders. But I have it set up to anything that changes on the computer. I want it backed up onto Mozy, and so the first upload, as I'm sure was the case with you with Dropbox, just takes forever.
Oh yeah.
So you're kind of churning through that for 2 or 3 days, and then every time after that, Mozy just goes, "Okay, hey, I noticed you haven't updated in a day, so I'm going to back up in the background here while you're working," and then you're working along in Photoshop, and it's like, "All right, I'm done. I'll see you later," and that's it. You know, it copied whatever 30 programs you've updated and or 30 files you've updated, and that's that.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's important. I don't
service an annual fee for.
What's that, Brett?
An annual fee.
Hey, that's serve you pay an annual fee for.
It is. Yeah, I think I bought a discounted like 2 year or 3 year service for it.
Yeah.
Let me see. I can go.
Do you guys feel like I was talking to Koo about it because he really likes Dropbox too. And when my stuff finally finished uploading and I noticed it, I said to Koo over IM, I said, 32 gigabytes in the cloud. And he said, I know, doesn't it feel, don't you feel safe? And I was like, yeah, I feel safe. And then I thought, why should I feel any safer? Like, it's not like it's some magical place with dragons protecting it. It's on a computer somewhere too.
Yeah.
But it's not on your computer. That's all you care about.
Well, but I think that, I mean, it's just like my hosting right now, you know, with Blind Ferret hosting me, it's load balanced between four computers, and I know they back it up. Where before, I needed to do that myself, and I never did.
Well, I was going to say, like, it's because you know it's not in your house where you know where all the fire hazards are, and you know that there's dust getting into that time capsule that you bought.
Right, and you're looking back at the wires behind your machine, and you're like, oh,
but
God,
you know
it's
what?
A tangled
it's so
net.
Funny. I was thinking about this the other day, but if you think about it, your data, right, your files. Like, I have files that I created in 1999, so – it's almost 10 years now that I've had these files. And it's not like it's that file survived because I backed it up to media and, yep, I still have that disk. Those files exist because you continually move them from your old system to your current system, or from your old system of backup to your current system of backup. Yeah. And it's this very ethereal thing. It's almost like an idea that will die the minute you stop thinking about it. It's just energy that you just keep moving around to the next vessel until it dies.
Right. I used to think about that with the – oh, go ahead, Jabe.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and in the meantime, the thing that always terrifies me, in the meantime, it all slowly has data degradation, you know, so that, like, who knows what you've actually lost in the interregnum years, you know?
No, I got to be honest. I really thought I was going to find that. I thought I was going to find that doing the Awesomeology, because I know there's files that I saved in 1998 that have been moved around. I really thought I'd open some and they'd say, this file's corrupt, but none of it happened. It didn't happen with any.
Really?
Yeah, no. None
good. That's good.
My problem is I've got a bunch of stuff that goes back even to like Microdesk, you know, and some of them I was able to get on zip disks, but pretty soon, you know, my zip disk reader isn't even going to work, you know, and some of the stuff I just failed to move up to CDs and DVDs and stuff like that.
I'm shocked you have a zip disk that still reads now.
I know, that's pretty cool.
You know what's sad is that
I haven't put anything into it in a long time. I can't confirm or deny that right now.
You know what? You know what's amazing is that I think in a gumball machine I bought a flash drive, pocket flash drive that's bigger than most zip disks I ever owned.
Oh, I know.
What's the size of a zip disk? I don't remember. Was it 100 megs?
I think they were 100 megs. Wasn't that the big one? It was like, wow, 100 megs. 100.
Yeah.
I had one time, oh, God, what was it called? It was a PsyQuest.
Yes. PsyQuest was the tapes, weren't
it? It was a 1 gig tape drive.
And I was
using it to back up music to. And what I noticed is that it corrupts that data. There's pops all over it. It was completely worthless. And that's why I had bought it.
You know what's really funny is I remember getting my mom for Christmas bought me the zip disc. What was the other one? There was a bigger one. Jazz disc.
A jazz drive.
Jazz, yeah.
But the zip discs were expensive. They were like super expensive. And I remember thinking to myself, that really limits how much you can back up because it's super expensive to get a new one of those. And there was like a click of death sound, which meant that disc had gone bad. Do you remember that?
Right.
The click of death?
Yeah.
And I had a friend that was like, he had the click of death and the disc wouldn't work anymore. And he had the data backed up somewhere, but he was bummed because he couldn't use a zip disc anymore because he couldn't afford another disc. And I thought I'm thinking to myself now, it's like, I put one of those, thumb drives into my computer and it made my computer kernel panic. It made my Mac laptop kernel panic. And, I discovered today why I was doing it, but I thought to myself, oh no, I wonder if that stick went bad. And I was like, oh, well, I'll go buy another one for, you know, $15 or $6 or whatever it is. And it's a 2 gig stick.
Yeah. You know, what's the best part of this discussion right now is the 18-year-old out there going, hey, old man, this is a fun talk to listen to.
Oh no, don't say that, Dave. You're right.
No, I know.
These are old things.
No, they are. I think there's more people that relate to this than not.
No, I'm just kidding. Although there is an 18-year-old out there going, good job, old man. Good job.
Boo, boo.
Well, shut up, kid.
Yeah.
Tell me more about your perambulators. Hey, speaking of old men, I want to take an opportunity before we switch to the next topic to announce a contest that I want to spearhead.
Do it. You know, we've been going for 1 hour, 17 minutes, so maybe this is the last thing we do.
I think that's a good idea.
You know what? All right. Well, I don't remember what convention I was at. I don't know if it was KatsuCon or whatever with Brad. I was sitting next to Brad, and I made the comment to Brad that I would love to see Brad's laugh turned into the backing sounds for dance music, like Euro House or Euro Electrica or something, Electronica, something like that. And so I want to establish the first annual Brad Geiger dance mix contest. And you can email me the MP3s or just send me the link to the file. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put them all up on SheldonComics.com /brad.html. And we'll figure out some way to vote, or maybe just the four of us will vote, and the winner will get Sheldon Book Collection. So if you are good at remixing, if you are good as a musician, you know, and I'm putting it out there as dance because that's what my mind goes to. But if you have a way of incorporating Brad's laugh into a different kind of song, I want to hear that too. But it's got to be new material. I don't, well, you know what? Heck, I'm not going to say new material.
If you listen. I don't know if you I know you don't listen to this, Dave, but I'm thinking to myself, Brad, of all those great Stern remixes where someone takes a laugh or a and puts it into a song where it sounds something similar to it.
Well, we already have one entry, and so when you go to sheldoncomics.com/bradhtml, you'll see that one up. I haven't put it up yet, but I'll have that page ready by the time this podcast goes up. And we will we'll have them all up there, and we'll say, I don't know, what do you guys say? Maybe by San Diego Comic Con we'll vote, or before then we'll have something.
Am I exempt from
no?
Oh my God, no! No, Chris, I want five or six entries from you.
Okay, what if I don't want Sheldon books? Is that?
Can I
get cash equivalent? Cash equivalent.
No, I can offer something better, Chris. What I can do is I can send you back the Starslip books I have.
That's good.
Dave,
I want
to hear. I want
the one that
me.
I half-heartedly signed to you, Dave.
That reminds me, Dave. When I was cleaning out my office, I found a Sheldon book, and my brother said, "Why is there a Sheldon book over here?" And, you know, I was like, I don't know, because it was in a spot where I'm like, okay, everything that's important, stick here. You know, like I had my photo album up at the office because I had used it when Brent and Jay got married for reference. And I had this one spot that was up above so that no water damage could happen to anything there. And it was this, you know, really important stuff. And Brian goes, did you mean to put a Sheldon book up here? And I go, huh, that's weird. Why would I have a Sheldon book up there?
No, I most definitely didn't mean that.
Well, no, it's just, you know, I mean, through somehow, you know, probably coming back from a con and not realizing I got a couple of Brad's books. I got a bunch of Chris's books. So I open it up, and on the inside, it was the Sheldon book you sent me before we super became friends or started Half Pixel or any of that. It was before we went to Blank Label probably. And it was like, oh, in admiration and friendship. It's just very, very sweet forward in the little inscription in the book. And I read it, and I was like, oh, that's why, because this was, you know, this is really nice. And Brian goes, wow, that's really nice. And then we both looked at each other and made this face that was – and it was – we just both started laughing. And the face was – and this comes after, you know, 35 years of being brothers. But it was a face that said, yeah, that was before I knew you. But we just looked at each other,
like,
just kind of went, well, I bet he doesn't mean that now. And I said, shut up, I know what you're thinking. And he goes, that's before he knew you, wasn't it? And I go, that's what I was thinking. And Brian said, you wouldn't get that inscription today. You wouldn't get that inscription today. And so I was so funny because I was telling my brother about fables. And Brian goes, well, I want to read that. Bring it over. And so I brought it over, and he goes, did you buy this from him? And I said, nah, he wouldn't let me buy it. And Brian opens it up, and on the inside it just says Brad Geigert. And Brian goes Brian said, oh, yeah, see, you don't get any fancy Dave inscription from Brad, and you wouldn't get it from Dave either now. It's just like Brad Geiger. Here's your book, Dave Kellett.
Well, mine's not even signed. It just says, here you go.
Yeah.
It's just, the only thing on the inside is the price.
Repeated. Underlined.
You and me.
But it's just,
speaking of books, I'll even throw in a copy for this contest, Dave. I'll throw in a copy of Evil Incorporated Volume 4, which is going to be printed in all color throughout. And I just, and as a matter of fact, an hour ago, announced pre-orders for that on my site.
Wow. Hey. Oh, nice.
You want me to sweeten the pot? We
launched the fourth book, and I will put an artist edition of that into the contest.
Here,
very nice.
Let me sweeten the pot even further. I will submit an awesomeology. No, I'm just kidding. I'll submit volume 5.
Oh, my
Chris?
God. I guess,
Chris, the weight has now fallen to you.
All right, volume 2, artist edition.
Awesome. So
dang,
it'll be
all right.
Artist edition. But listen. This better be frickin' good. I want genius.
Okay, so, yeah, it's got to be good stuff. We already have one good submission, which you can listen to from linked when you go to the site. We want them good. So one book from each of us then. That's how we'll do it.
Yeah. And we'll send the prizes out post-San Diego because at that point, Brad will have seen all of us and gotten artist editions from him. And that way we can be sure the prize actually gets mailed out.
Actually, you know what? I'll just gather up the books from all four of us at San Diego and I'll mail them out. That's fine.
Yeah, because if you leave it up to me, those prizes are never getting out, my mans.
I'll just have Brad distracted, but I'll go take a volume 5 of PvP from the table.
I heard a story this weekend about a comic book artist that will go unnamed that has been notoriously taking money for commissions. And this is a comic book artist, not just some webcomic schmuck like us. Taking money for commissions and never sending the commission. And when you call this person on it, they say, I'll get to you at the next event, or I'll get to you in a couple months. And all these people have kind of started talking to each other. And so this came up this weekend, and I said, God, I'm trying to think to myself if I've ever done something like that, because I'm sure I'm guilty of it. And it dawned on me, there was this company called X-Fire. Have you ever heard of X-Fire?
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, the X-Fire is this company where they've got this program to where you can chat with people like an instant messenger while you're playing your game.
Yeah.
Okay. Like normally when you're playing City of Heroes, it knocks you out off your desktop and you can't use it. But X-Fire will find a way to push through and let you talk while you're, you know, and it's struggling to survive just with all these other Ventrilo and stuff. But they wanted me to do this chat. And it was just – I didn't – and no offense to them. They were a great company. And I just didn't want to do the chat. And it was like – it was essentially like doing a chat with all the asshole 13-year-olds that you encounter on Xbox Live. You know, it was just an hour of, why are you such a fat dumbass? You know, stuff like that. You know, and like why you hate Tim Buckley so much? That kind of stuff. And so I was like, all right, please let this end. And so they asked me – hey, listen, do you mind if we have a contest where you send us a couple pieces of swag and then we give it away to the people that submitted questions? And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Whatever you want from the store. And they go, well, how about a t-shirt and a book and it's real simple stuff. All I need to do is put it in a package and mail it out. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. I was so relieved when that interview was over that I deleted all the emails. I was done. I was like, I never want to hear from X-Fire again. And I never sent the prizes. Never sent them. And that was right when I lost my hosting at Speakeasy. And so they were sending me emails like, please send these prizes to my Speakeasy email, which I never checked anymore.
Oh, no.
And I just never thought about it again. And I was at a con one time and some guy came up to me and was like, thanks for the prize. And I was like, no problem. What? I mean, I know he's talking about it. He goes, I won one of your X-Fire prizes and you never delivered it. And I was like, oh, my God, that was like 2 years ago. And he's like, yeah, and I still haven't gotten it. And I'm all right. Uh-oh. Like, are you hanging on to that? Are you at night trying to sleep and going, I can't sleep. What is it, honey? I'm all tied up about this X-Fire prize. You know, I put a lot into that question. I wanted to know why Scott thought he could get away with being such a fat, dumbass, Jabba the Hutt asshole. And I won a book for that, and I want my book. And so I'm doing this routine in front of him at the con. I'm like, were you like, I can't sleep, honey. Tell the kids no Disney World this weekend because I'm torn up about this plush I didn't get. And he's like, you know what? You're an a-hole, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, here. And I've got my arms out like Jesus on the cross. I'm like, here. What behind me do you need? What can I give to you to make up for that amazing question that you asked? And he got mad and left. And I sat down, and Angie's like, what is your problem? Why are you so mean to him? And I go, I think I was being mean to myself. I think, like, I was mad at myself and projecting it on him. Like, I feel really awful that I didn't send those prizes in. So I apologize to all you guys that asked those wonderful questions.
So that's the capstone.
Yeah. No, I'm not sending them. I'll be damned.
Now it's an honor.
No,
thing.
Yeah. You can pry those prizes out of my cold, dead hand, you sons of bitches.
I like that they're prizes. They're not even – it's abstracted from books or plushes. Like, my prizes. Well, just wonderful things for people to have.
Yeah.
Now, though, it's become like Kirk making peace with the Klingons. You're just like, no, I can't do it.
Let them die. You Klingon bastard, you killed my son.
You killed my son. Like bastards.
So, Chris, you do the "they're dying" Jim line.
Oh, what was it? It was just "they're dying," Jim.
Yeah, how fucking hard is that? Can you give me the line? I'm trying to be brilliant here. Okay, go.
Give it here. "They're dying," Jim.
Let them die. Brilliant, right? What was his next line?
Hey. Is that it? Thank you. Here, let me try. He's dead, Jim. No. Star Trek, right?
Just
to help Capstone that, let me help finish that off. Oh, you know, Nancy.
Oh, jeez. Why?
And you know, Johnny Carson was the era. I think he'd probably...
I think he'd sound a little something like this. Anyway.
Well, you know, I'm not making that up.
I'm sorry. Chris, do it again. I remember the line now.
Okay. They're dying, Jim.
Let them die. Now, and then you act all surprised. Has it occurred to you that this crew is due to stand down in 3 months? We've done our bit for king and country. You should have trusted me. That was the part that I loved, is when he goes, you should have trusted me.
Well, I just remember that he's allergic to Retinox.
Yeah, I'm allergic to Retinox 5. Retinox 5, sir.
Whoops.
Dope.
Beep.
I got best.
Well, I'm just excited for Not My Father's Star Trek coming out. Because my father's watched a lot of Star Trek, and now I'm ready to watch some Star Trek.
Did you guys see Mindy Kaling from The Office show? She has a Twitter, which she wrote about it.
She said,
this ain't your white parents' parents. This ain't your white friend's parents' Star Trek.
You know, I really think that Star Trek movie is going to be good, and it's the victim of bad marketing.
I agree with you.
I don't think Star Trek was the driving force of Abrams' vision.
Can I tell you something that gave me a lot of hope? Somebody Twittered a review, a part of a review that they had found, and it was something about how Gene Roddenberry's vision, bright vision of the future, had not died. And I really appreciated that it wasn't just going to be like Kirk punching guys and jumping off things and banging chicks. And
yeah.
That's...
Did any of you see Cloverfield?
I saw Cloverfield, yeah.
It was awesome.
A great movie.
That movie was fantastic. I think Abrams will make really awesome movies. And I actually, for the most part, I mean, because it was Cruise and Mission Impossible again, I really like Mission Impossible 3.
Don't think that's...
Well, you know what? I will disagree with you about Cloverfield, but here's what I think what happened with the marketing on Star Trek. They know in their heart of hearts that every Trekkie and Trekker and anybody who ever liked Trek to begin with is going to come to that. So that whole ad campaign of "This is not your father's Star Trek" is just like, we've got to get other people. We've got to get other people, you know?
Let me ask you a question from a marketing standpoint. Do you think it was a bad idea to bring that in? Because I would have just approached it like it was a new property and not been like, don't worry, this isn't like the one your grandfather liked. Because I think there's a lot of kids that would go, what, my grand? It was then? They had it back then? It was when my grandfather was alive?
No, but the critique of the old Treks is that it was too goody-goody and the pace wasn't every action-packed.
No, but
the
problem is this, okay? The problem is that to say this ain't your father's Star Trek would work with any other science fiction TV show. Because the problem with any other science fiction TV show, or any cartoon for that matter, is that the product never holds up to memory. I mean, you can go back and even watch something that was supposed to be a kid's show. I mean, Lost in Space, you can maybe watch one of those and just go, okay, I'm not going to watch more of these.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm done.
Think about them all. Battlestar Galactic, Greatest American Hero, any of the shows that you love. Dukes of Hazzard, holy crap. You ever tried to watch a Dukes of Hazzard as an adult? Any of the G.I. Joe cartoons, any of the Thundercats cartoons, it's all crap. But I don't care if I've seen it 12 times. You put a original series Star Trek in front of me, I'll watch it. I'll watch every second of it. They're all great. My father and I went and watched The Menagerie, which in my opinion is the worst episodes of Star Trek ever.
Sure it is.
And we went and saw it in the theater because they were playing it in a theater locally.
Yeah, but you're not the person they're trying to market to, though, is what I'm saying, is that they've got you already. You're hooked. You're going. No matter how bad the movie is, you're going.
I know that. But what I'm saying is if you were to tell a Battlestar Galactica fan, hey, we've come up with a marketing campaign for the new BSG show on Sci-Fi, and it says, this ain't your daddy's Battlestar. Every fan would be like, yes, please get the word out, because it is not. But Star Trek is the only thing where that does not work.
Because it has such a bright, optimistic future, and we don't want to see that trod upon.
Well, that's what I'm telling you, is that what they're trying to market against. is yeah. the bright future and the slow pace and the same matching uniforms and right. all that. Because that's the critique among people that checked out on Star Trek. You know?
But if the thing is, the funny thing to me is when I watch that trailer, it seems like they're purposely trying not to show anything really exciting. I mean, what
well,
have they shown?
Me,
They've
I got,
shown
I got
two
the feeling
punches
that they were trying to market it like a triple X movie, you know, or a no, not triple. Not tri- I don't mean
no,
triple X
I
like
knew
porn.
What you
I
meant
mean triple
too.
X like a.
That's how extreme. Not into porn I am. That's how much of an old man prude I am. Is that when you said triple X, I thought immediately the Vin Diesel movie.
Yeah, I actually did mean the Vin Diesel movie. Just the idea of like explosion, jumping out of a boat, punching a guy. Like that's what they're marketing.
Yeah.
But you know, there's going to be a lot of quiet moments where Spock is like, "Oh boy, this is really."
I was going to say, what are they going to show? Like the Vulcan vistas? Like, you're not going to get yeah. excited about mountains. You're not
right,
going to get excited about Vasquez Rocks.
I've only seen one clip. That's just a clip from the movie. And I'm like, no more. I don't want anything spoiled. This is just going to be so awesome. And the premise of the clip was the one that you showed me, Chris, where they're like, why are there so many lens flares in this movie?
Yeah.
And you know what? I love it. At first I was counting them. I'm like, that's ridiculous. But then I watched the clip again. I'm like, oh, I love it. More lens flares.
I think it's a neat idea.
If Kirk doesn't turn to someone and say, Officer Lens Flare, I need shields.
And, then they cut over to a guy that's just all mirrors.
Yeah, just a blob of light. the clip involves well, I'm not even going to say, but the clip is just it just feels so Star Trek. It's just so awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to go see it. But
wait, when does this come out?
Next Friday. It comes out Friday, dude.
Oh boy.
Uh-huh.
Oh boy.
Yeah, boy.
Midnight.
Well, hey, gents, since we're getting into hour two, and I imagine it's 2 a.m. for young Bradley over there. Is that right, Brad? Do I have my time right?
Yes, indeed. Let's go ahead and shut her down.
Brad's looking at his things to do list, and he sees wife in 2 minutes, and it's he's got to get going. So,
but don't fret, boys. Don't fret, because I guarantee you everyone listening right now is in the middle of a project or at work, and they are just so happy they got to hang out with us for an hour 30. And they don't even care what we were talking about. Yep. Next week we review Wolverine, maybe. Who knows?
we talk about how Dave cleans out his navel. It's an exciting process. You're going to want to tune in.
Yeah. Has anybody read any Ayn Rand? I have. We're going to talk about it next week.
I tell you what, I've given that one 2 shrugs up.
God.
Wow.
What?
Right? That's
Boom.
Right. I went there.
I was going to go deeper, but never mind.
Yeah, I was halfway through Who is John, and then you were like, oh, shrugged.
Well, you know what? Let's end it on a positive note.
I thought you were going to say, talk about Ayn Rand at last.
Oh, that actually would have been good.
Yeah,
all right. I was going to groan at that, but that was
let's Hey, guys, let's keep on our objective. Objectivism? No? God damn it, you guys didn't even read it.
and then it cuts back to me and I go, we'll all have fountain drinks, and then everyone just laughs. The chorus.
Oh, that's right in my head. Ha ha ha. All right, so I'm going to end it on a high note again. Once again, the first annual Brad Geiger International Dance Mix-Off. So send them – email me, Dave at DaveKellett.com, or just go to Sheldon and click on whatever the email button is there. Send them in. Send me links. Send me the MP3 files. We'll get them up, and we'll have the gifts going out around San Diego Comic-Con. And we'll probably announce – we should probably announce it at San Diego Comic-Con then. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll figure that out.
Let's give them time to put it together. It's only 2 months away.
Yeah.
Do we
some of this stuff
have a
to
panel
make,
in
to
San
create...
Diego this year?
Do we have a panel?
Oh, yes. That's on my things list, actually, is to follow up with Brad.
We are being considered for a panel last week.
As we speak, right now there's people at the San Diego Comic-Con offices at 2 a.m. going,
they're finishing this. They're finishing this podcast right now, and it's ending, and they just go, nope.
They just have the big nope stamp, and they just put ink on it before.
We're gonna have a lot of Star Trek panels, guys. We don't need you. It's all right. That's fine. We're pretty booked up.
Sorry, Half Pixel. We're rejecting your panel titled "Too Many Lens Flares?" ? All right. Well, ladies and gents, let's wrap it up.
Webcomics Weekly.
You can always check out our work, or rather, Brad's work at webcomics.com. and who's doing a fantastic job, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, kudos, Brad.
Hell yeah, he is.
Adolf of the Captain Brad Geiger on that. And, gents, what do you say? Let's do it again next week.
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
So get ready to hear this online in 5 weeks. Then.
All right.
Well, you know what? I'm sending out digital hugs to all
three
of you.
And I'm going to stop recording now.